Welcome to the Construction Disruption Podcast, where we uncover the future of design, building, and remodeling.
I'm Todd Miller of Isaiah Industries, manufacturer of specialty residential metal roofing and other building materials. And today I am your host of Construction Disruption. So we are into season two at this point. And once again, we are doing challenge words, where both the guest and myself have been given a word that we are challenged to work into the conversation as seamlessly as possible. So you, the listener, can be listening to see if you recognize our challenge word. So I got a couple quick stories to tell our audience here before we get started. First one, this was kind of cool. So everyone's been familiar in recent years with the resurgence of vinyl records and listening to records on vinyl again. We get away from all the CDs and stuff. Well, I saw this thing the other day that someone has come out with a record player that is entirely made of chocolate. It sounds pretty sweet when you listen to it. Okay, so you'll have to think about that one a little bit. So one other story I do want to share with you. So a few years ago, my wife and I started to enjoy going on hikes. We would just go to a local park. We have a really beautiful one in our town, and we would just kind of go on a nature walk sort of thing. And I would oftentimes kind of put together sort of a song mix for us to listen to as we walked. And I really came up with a perfect song mix for our hikes. I would play some songs from the Peanuts movie from years ago. And then I would have some songs done by the Cranberries. And I would also have some songs by M&M. I called it our trail mix. Okay, so let's just go ahead and just get started with the show here, if that's okay. So today I'm kind of excited. We have a repeat offender on our show, a repeat guest, actually. I really couldn't be more excited. It's been nearly a year and a half since Eric Finnegan was our guest. And during his first interview, I have to say he really opened my eyes to some new views and insights into the construction and remodeling industries. So Eric is the Vice President of Building Products Research and Demographics with John Burns Research and Consulting. Eric has a master's degree in economics from Fordham University. I follow him especially on LinkedIn, and he is, I tell you, he's just a veritable cornucopia of information, data, statistics, and insight into our great industry. If you want to know where things are going, Eric, in my opinion, is one of the top guys that you really should be following in our industry. Again, Eric Finnegan, as it says on his LinkedIn profile, his goal is to provide demographics clarity for our industry. Eric, welcome to Construction Disruption. It's great to have you back here today.
Yeah, glad to be here, Todd. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I think maybe a great place for you to start, because it has been a year and a half since you've been on, is to give us an overview of John Burns Research and Consulting. You guys have actually gone through a little bit of a name change since the last time we talked. So tell us a little bit about that and things you guys are involved in these days.
Sure. So John Burns Research and Consulting now, it used to be John Burns Real Estate Consulting. Small change, but it sort of accurately captures or reflects that we have about half of our business is research analysis and insights for a broad, basically any company involved in the housing market. So that's building product manufacturers, it's home builders, it's apartment developers, investors in the space. And then about half of our business is on development consulting, feasibility studies, market studies for maybe a builder that wants to understand demand in a very hyper local market or part of a submarket, basically anywhere in the country. We work all over the country. I really have over the last year. So what we try to do is distill down. We try to capture what's happening today. It's based on all of the resources that we can pull together, market studies, data out there. We talk to people out there in the market that are selling homes, building homes, and understand today really in service of planning and really understanding and making decisions about the future. So that's our big focus. I'd say as a company, we maniacally focus on understanding today so that we can help our clients make decisions about tomorrow.
Well, it's certainly good stuff, and no doubt about it. We are in such a huge industry that impacts really the whole nation and economy and housing and all kinds of things to such a great degree that I love what you guys are doing. So that's kind of my feelings as far as, you know, why it's really neat what you guys are doing and an important part of the industry. I'm kind of curious for you personally, what really interests you about construction and remodeling industries? What kind of captures your, hey, this is why I'm passionate about this?
It's a good question. I think there's a couple of different answers to that. One is I'm a data guy. I've never built a home myself. We just bought our first home, so I actually haven't done any remodeling yet, other than some light repairs. But I think
you will, it'll catch you eventually.
I will, yes, definitely. I'm looking forward to that, actually. But the thing that I would say I'm most passionate about is the fact that the work that we do in this industry touches every single person in the country every single day of their lives. It's where they fall asleep at night. And you know, you look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So it's the foundation is secure housing, right? Many of us, we want to feel secure in our home. We want to be proud of it. It's a long-term investment. I would say that it's the biggest purchase that most people make in their lives is their home, or if they rent, it's their biggest monthly expense. And I think it's a really exciting place to be. I mean, I've moved around so many times since I was, you know, left my, you know, house where I grew up to go to college, and just seeing the different, all the different kind way I've lived over the last, say, 20 years, way everyone else lives. You can really learn a lot about people also by understanding what choices they make around housing. So there's a lot of different answers to that. But I think that just the fact that anyone listening to this has a home, right? And it affects everyone.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, you know, when we met before, and we were on the show, we were still pretty much in the midst of COVID. You know, at this point now that it's at least somewhat, we hope, in our rearview mirror, how do you see things shaking out since the pandemic? Any particularly maybe surprising permanent impacts, you think, from COVID?
Yeah, I remember when we each had it last time, it was a little bit at the tail end, and we were wondering, hey, a lot of stuff, so much has changed since that, since, you know, the beginning of COVID, right? Like house prices skyrocketed. A lot of people working from home for the first time, you know, moving further and further from their offices. Mortgage rates had, you know, went down to record lows, and then they were, I think, right in the middle of our conversation, they were skyrocketing in a pretty big way. So right around then, I remember thinking, we were thinking, what does this do to housing, right? If mortgage rates go from under 3% to ultimately over 8% at one point in the span of about a year, year and a half. And a couple of things have, I think, become more clear by this point. One is that about 30% of workdays. So let me just say that again, because I'm trying not to speak like an economist sometimes. My mind thinks that way. There's millions of people working from home at least half of the week now, mm-hmm. a third to a half of the week, right? So I'm working from home right now. I need a whole room in my house to do that. And I'm one of, like I said, millions of people. So there's millions of extra rooms in homes being used today that were not used 5 years ago. So just think of, people need more space. They need more privacy. If they were living with roommates before, now they more of them are willing to pay for an extra bedroom in their apartment, so that they can work from home. They're willing to move further out where they can afford larger homes. So this work from home piece has, I think, permanently shifted the housing market in a way that something like the automobile affected the housing market. Something like phones affected the housing market, letting you live farther and farther away from the place that you do business or maybe some of your family. This work from home, the technology has been there for 10 years or so to allow it to happen, but it really took the drastic shift from COVID to actually have people realize on a really mass scale, it can be done. It can be done really effectively. So I would say the work from home phenomenon is a permanent shift.
Very interesting.
There's a few others too. Like I would say, you know, when mortgage rates were record low, under 3% in many cases for people, millions and millions of people refinance their mortgage. So we have about 75% to 80% of outstanding mortgages today are under 5%. So they're paying a rate that is that's pretty far under where they would have to reset their rate if they go to refi or they go to move. So it's just this long-term, large financial incentive to just stay put. Mm-hmm. So it's what we've been calling the lock-in effect. It's pretty well known at this point. And the FHFA, which is a Federal Housing Finance Agency, just came out with a study actually this week pointing out how much of an impact that's had on housing. And it's, you know, responsible for hundreds of thousands of home sales not happening. So like hundreds of thousands of households that would have moved at this point just haven't. So that's kept resale inventories low. It's kept prices high. It's actually a really good piece for remodeling if you're in the remodeling industry, where instead of moving to a larger home, a trade-up home, for instance, or if you're say a 65, 70 year old, and maybe you think about trading down or moving somewhere else, it's a big incentive to actually stay put and upgrade and improve your current home. So we've seen that a lot in our remodeling surveys, actually.
Yeah. You know, it's been interesting over the years. I mean, we manufacture fairly high-end roofing materials, and we have always seen and heavily focused on the remodeling market. And we have always seen that we kind of go the opposite of the economy. You know, when new construction is down and people are staying put, we tend to grow. So it makes a lot of sense. Well, I saw recently on LinkedIn where you had put a post out about recently released 2023 census information. And, you know, that information tends to not necessarily have impact, but show a lot happening that's going to affect housing. What are some high points of that recently released information that you can share with us?
Sure. So it's one of the most exciting days of my year, I would say. And don't tell anyone that, because that I'm just a huge nerd. I mean, there's a couple of different pieces. One is that we know so the census basically estimated 2023 population for every county across the country. And what we found out was that like before, suburbs are the growth engine of the country's population and of the housing market. The suburbs grew about 1.2 million people last year. If you include the exurbs, which are like the counties just outside the suburbs and the outer rings of many of the larger cities, those grew an extra 200,000. So we can say about 1.5 million people, or 1.5 million more people, live in the suburbs and exurbs versus a year ago, which is which is substantial growth.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it makes sense, because that's where there are homes to move into. That's where people are moving from cities out to the suburbs. That's where builders are delivering homes. That's where there's, you know, good schools, et cetera. One other key piece, though, is we actually saw early on in COVID that a lot of people left cities, you know, whether it's small families or young couples. They were like, oh, we want to move out of the city and buy a house because now is the best time we could possibly do that, with a 2.7% mortgage rate. So we saw cities lose a huge chunk of population in 2020 and 2021. And that's actually now basically stopped. So people that were in cities that were leaving before, it's more likely that if someone's moving as a city dweller, they're moving to somewhere else in the city. So a different apartment or a smaller home. And it's actually pretty much in line with what we've seen with rental demand over the last year or so. We can basically capture a lot of the population movements through market stats and where people are moving. So we just really saw that the urban populations, urban areas stopped losing population. Suburbs and exurbs really drove the growth. And then in terms of regions of the country, which I think is also super interesting, is that the Southeast over sort of like the Smile States, I guess, it's sort of like this shape of like from the Carolinas down to Florida, Georgia, Texas, Arizona. Those are the very strong growth markets, growth states across the country. And those are still growing extremely fast. The only caveat there is that the growth, instead of being red hot, sort of record high growth, it's come down a tiny bit. Okay. It's because there's just fewer homes to move into. So fewer opportunities for people from, say, the Northeast or from the upper Midwest to move to a better climate. Or lower taxes. So there's still people moving. It's just a slightly lower volume. And that means that states that are losing population, like New York and California, Illinois, New Jersey, they're losing fewer people. So the movement of people is generally still to the South and the Southwest. It's just a little bit less than it was during COVID.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And what that means for housing is just there's a ton of housing demand. If you look at the nation as a whole, you know, the population's growing, we think, really fast. But if you can look at where it's growing, where it's mostly growing, it's sort of eye popping what it looks like there. Like the U.S. is a substantially, I would say, U.S. is, I try to think about this. The U.S. is a growth market. It's the big. It's I think it's maybe the second biggest economy in the world at this point. But it's growing extremely fast, especially in certain areas like the Southeast, Texas, Arizona, places like that.
Very good. Well, I like that when you talked about the Southeast as the Smile States. I never really heard it that way or thought of it, but I'm going to remember that because now I think of, okay, those are the states where crocodiles live. I never smile at a crocodile, but actually alligators live there, but still I'll make the connection. I'll remember that. So cool stuff. So how do you see this population shifts and shrinkage? I mean, I understand how it impacts housing and demand, but how is it impacting remodeling and what's happening with you know, our housing stock and aging, and what do you project going out with remodeling? It seemed like, you know, last year we kind of saw, especially in higher end remodeling, a little bit of a soft year in the higher end stuff, a little bit, you know, fairly strong year still in a lot of other areas. What does remodeling look like, you know, as you look out again here?
That's good to hear. It's consistent with what we've heard from our remodeler survey. So we go out to the market with a survey partner, qualified remodeler, and ask remodelers what they're seeing in their markets. Basically every quarter, what do they expect for demand in the future? And last year was definitely a softer year, reset after this massive boom during COVID.
Right.
When everyone was, you know, pulling out, homeowners basically took out $250 billion of cash out of their home equity and spent it a lot on remodeling. Also, you know, big RVs and things like that, but a lot of money spent on remodeling. So if you could look at, you know, the trend in spending, you could see a huge shift upward in 2020, 21, 22, up above, over and above what it was a normal trend, you know. In 23, it fell below the long-term trend. So it's sort of a give back. It's, you know, projects that would have happened in 23, did they just happen earlier? We think that this, it sort of catches back up to the trend going forward. So one is that, a couple of pieces driving that. One is that if the Federal Reserve starts lowering interest rates this year, that makes home equity loans, home equity lines of credit are directly tied to that federal funds rate. So those are going to come down. And one of the things actually a year and a half ago is we were really uncertain about where home values would end up. Some markets, like in Austin, Texas, for instance, have really seen home prices fall pretty significantly. But for most of the country, home prices didn't go down at all. And actually, they're starting to rise again. So I think I said this on our last interview, but it's worth repeating, which is that if you want to look at the trend in remodeling, especially high-end remodeling and big projects, just look at what home values are doing in your local market. And for most markets in most of the country, they're going up again. So we think there's a real turnaround coming in remodeling. It's starting to see a base, and you know, from our remodeler survey. So we think 2024 is going to be a return to growth for remodeling. And then in terms of parts of the country, I would say it's two factors. One is that, what is the age of the housing stock, right? So we've identified this period of time, sort of 20 years after the home is finished, that most of the major systems and most of the major components of the house are now obsolete. They require replacement or upgrading. So it's this 20 to sort of, they call it 39, but 20 to 40 years. So that 20-year window, most of the home gets upgraded. And this is true across the country and across time. So it's a pretty predictable upgrade cycle. So if you can look at where a lot of the homes in are of that age, you can predict, okay, here's where a lot of homes are going to need remodeling. And then a layer on top of that, I'm again thinking like an economist here, but just follow me for a second, okay? So if you can find where homes are 20 to 40 years old, and where the area, the income of the area is high, that sort of sets up a real ripeness for that's, there's a high likelihood that home is going to get a big remodeling project. So a member of our team, Ian Kennedy, is just a wizard with maps and the census data. He's put together a map that I can't show it on this podcast, but we can maybe post it later or something. But you can look at every county in the country and see where do you find this intersection of 20 to 40 year old homes and very high income. And it turns out there's actually most major cities in the country have a lot of these sort of ripe areas. So from, you know, I'm looking at the map right now, but it's all across down the Eastern Seaboard, from Boston to New Jersey is a big area, all the way down to, call it DC. And then there's pockets in Atlanta, Houston, Dallas, Austin, lots in Florida. It's really almost everywhere in the country, I would say, is going to benefit from this sort of prime remodeling wave, call it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, even as I look at my own neighborhood, we're kind of now in that 40 year plus range as far as age. And, you know, during that 20 to 40 years, I saw a lot of people doing replacement products, new kitchens, new roofs, new siding. But now I'm also seeing people starting this new phase doing more like whole home remodels and major additions and those types of things. So makes a lot of sense. And yeah, we will definitely want to get that link to Ian's map so that we can put it in the show notes, because that sounds like something of great interest to both remodeling contractors and architects and designers as well. Very interesting stuff. Good information. Thank you. I'm kind of curious, and I think you've kind of already queued this up pretty good, but you know, if you were someone today, a contractor just entering construction or remodeling market, it kind of sounds like maybe that mid to upper end remodeling would be an awfully good market for you to enter if those types of homes were in your area. And like you said, there's pockets of them every place.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple reasons why is sort of the bottom half of the market, or maybe the bottom two thirds of the market. So like a lot of people that do small projects, or sort of the middle range of income people that are really splurging for their kitchen upgrade or bathroom remodel, the demand cycles go up and down there. So there's some volatility. So if you're entering the business for the first time, I think one of the hardest things, I can speak as a former business owner myself, the hardest thing is not being able to predict what's going to happen next year. So I would look at what are some areas of the market that are going to be strong very long term. And there might be a little bit of ups and downs every year, but a really strong long-term demand over the next 10, 20 years. And we think that the baby boom population, or the people say over 60, they're going to live, if once they reach 60, their life expectancy at that point is another 25, almost 30 years. So they're prepping to sort of stay in their home long-term. And I can tell the story about my mom here. She's getting up there in age, and she's retired now for a handful of years, and she owns a small home in our hometown. And we had a conversation with her last year about where does she want to live? Where does she want to actually grow old? Is it the home she's in now, or does she want to figure out a situation that, you know, maybe she doesn't want to maintain a home and replace the roof, or figure out how to get the grass mowed every week? We had a conversation with her, and she's like, I want to go somewhere where I can take care of a garden. I can have my cats. I can have privacy. And I'm thinking like, that's really hard to do in a condo or a townhome or something like that. So she's like, I want to stay where I am. I'm willing to make, you know, put a bunch of money into the house to make it comfortable and make it accessible for when I'm older, much older. So I think there's a lot of that happening, and it's again borne out in a lot of our surveys that older people are prepping to stay in their homes for a long time. And this idea that they're going to move to nursing homes and active adult communities, that's certainly happening on some level, but the baby boom population, you got to think about them. They were fiercely independent, much more so than their parents. So they have just maintained that sort of streak of independence into old age, and they are postponing and putting off moving into sort of nursing home type situations, the long-term care facilities, as long as they possibly can. So that means they're going to stay where they are. And the baby boom population as a whole has about $72 trillion of net worth today. So it's not split evenly across the population. The median is somewhere between 300,000 and 500,000 for the baby boomers, but they have money to spend and they can't take it with them. So they're actually, a lot of them are spending it now on remodeling their home, or they're helping their adult children buy and rent homes. We think that really that part of the market that's serving baby boomers, especially at the high end, is a very strong market and will be for the next 10 years, 20 years.
Very interesting. You know, you've touched on it already. You've talked a little bit about, you know, baby boomers, maybe even moving into Gen X. As we look at the younger generations, we look at, you know, millennials and Gen Y and those types of things. Are you seeing any real different trends from them in terms of what they want in terms of housing? Now, my son is, I guess, kind of on the young edge of millennials, but honestly, he wants nothing to do with home ownership. I don't know if that is typical of his age or if he's just the outlier, which he probably is. But are there any trends you're seeing in those younger generations?
So, yeah, so it makes sense that your son at the younger end of millennial is not thinking about home ownership. I would say I'm at the other end of the millennials. I'm just turned 40. So I was born in 83, which is, you know, in the first few years of the millennial generation. And the question about 10 years ago when I was in this space was the same kind of question. Like, are millennials gonna buy homes? And it's this big question, right? So we graduated college and entered the job market in the worst financial crisis, the worst recession since the 1930s, and tons of student debt. And it was, you know, this whole idea that nobody wanted to own anything. So we would take Ubers everywhere and rent apartments and get, you know, dinners delivered from, you know, all these apps and whatever. And is this a big shift from what came before? And certainly some of that happened, but it turns out over the last 10 years, you get to see the leading edge of the millennial generation entered homeownership just a little bit later, just a couple of years later than the people that came before them, the Gen Xers. So the median age of first-time homebuyers today is 35. So that means by the time If you look at 35-year-olds today, half of them are homeowners, half of them aren't. And the general trend is that by the time people reach, you know, the average of 45, 50, 55, there's a massive increase in the number of people that own homes. And we don't have the data yet to point to the millennials doing that, but they are following the exact shape of the increase in homeownership that the Gen Xers did and that the baby boomers did. So it's happening. It's just a little bit delayed, right? So, and I think that the thing was with homeownership doesn't make sense until it does. And then one day, or over the span of a year, like I could just tell from my own personal experience that I was so against, not against owning, but it just did not make sense for me. I was moving occasionally. I left New York City in 2015. I came out to Colorado. I lived in Breckenridge. I was like snowboarding every day for a year. Took a year off to sort of reset. It just didn't make sense to own a home at that point.
Sure.
But then it was like into my later 30s, I got married. We got a dog. I have a stepdaughter. My wife has a daughter. And suddenly renting is like, this doesn't make sense anymore. I actually want a place of permanence. I want to enjoy the stillness of homeownership and the security and the stability and the predictability of homeownership. And it finally made sense. And I think there's I would say that story doesn't maybe generalize to everyone, but it's a general trend that people at some point in their 30s will realize they want to buy a house and then go do it. So I would say give your son a few years, maybe 5 or 10. He might change his mind.
So I think we've touched on that on the show before, that maybe it doesn't so much have to do with the generation as it does just age, and those things do come with age a little bit.
Exactly. And just the size of the millennial generation, I just want to talk about the size for a second. So there's 68 million baby boomers today. Some of them, the population is starting to shrink because some of them are reaching old age and the end of their lives. But the millennials are 74 million of us.
Wow.
And so we're actually bigger than the baby boom. And then Gen Z is behind us. There's 71 million of them today. But if you think about immigration, people generally come to the country in that sort of 20s to early 30s time frame, or late teens to come for college or anything like that. So the Gen X population is still growing. So within a couple of years, there's going to be more Gen Zs than millennials. So it's just a massive, massive tailwind of people that are aging into renting their first home, moving into their into homeownership and trading up. There's a big wave of people coming. So that's why one of the things we've been talking about is just stable, long-term demand for housing.
Very interesting. Good stuff. Well, let's switch gears and talk about building materials a little bit. Any growth or shrinkage trends in particular building material products or product types that you're seeing out there that may have an impact?
Yeah, so I think two ways to think about this would be what's the cycle of demand for different products right now? And we can see that one is the demand for certain products and the trend. The other one is just overall different changes within product categories. So for instance, single family builders are ramping up production in 2024, and they were in the second half of 2023 as well. And we can really see from our stats that demand for materials that are used early on in the construction cycle have really turned up at where a year ago, or when we were recording our last interview, there was a real softening because builders were pulling back, slowing down. So the demand for lumber, demand for certain other roof trusses, things like that were falling. Now that's actually growing pretty significantly. And because there was a big slowdown a year ago, the demand for materials that are used at the tail end of a single family home being built and developed, those are actually pretty slow or slower right today. So things like wallboard or landscaping materials, things like that. So we can kind of look through the cycle there. But I think there's other more interesting sort of longer term shifts within product categories. Look at like what where are the where's innovation happening today? What kinds of innovations are taking off? One is I like to think of what's the sort of innovation space today? Like why innovate? One is there's a massive labor shortage in the construction industry. So what you'll see is that even though there's demand for homes, it's really hard for builders to ramp up construction really quickly because they just don't have the labor for it. They don't have the skilled labor to do framing or to do the skilled trades. So you're seeing that building product manufacturers are innovating through creating products that are easier and more efficient to install. So it actually requires less labor to install. So some of our team members went to the International Builders Show, IBS, KBIS, end of last month. Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks ago. It seems like a while ago. But one of them pointed out that Pella, which is a window manufacturer, they came up with a new installation system that lets someone install a window 3 times faster.
Wow.
And it's just one person versus the standard 2-person installation. So again, just think about the labor savings there. If you take that one window and put in, a couple dozen windows in a house. So that's an example of labor saving that we're really on the lookout for. We think it's really going to hopefully eases some of the productivity issues in construction and lets builders ramp up production, even though there's this labor shortage. Another one is things like energy efficiency or efficiency with re using resources. Like le there's a bunch of new like leak detection systems where if there's a you install the system in your house and if there's a water leak somewhere, it just shuts off the main water valve, so you're not wasting water. It's going to be, I think, really important for places that are that are really constrained on the water supply, right? And then there's another one I saw that was kind of interesting and had me think of a little bit about how that would work. But they seem to have developed a system where you can recycle shower water and actually use the same water in the shower. So they disinfect it. They obviously take out any kind of like any hair or anything like that. That's all filtered out, but it comes back into the shower head as clean water. And so you're using a lot less water, even though if you like me, you like hot, long showers in the morning or at night. So less water usage, I think, which is really interesting. And then a big one is just for people are needing homes that are affordable, which means builders having to build smaller homes. And that means space is sort of like the constraint. Space is at a premium, which means if you can put a washer and a dryer, say, in the same unit, that's a great selling point. So we're starting to see some of those where it's taking large appliances and shrinking them down.
Those are some very interesting trends. I wish I would have gone to the Home Builder Show this year. I did not, but always a great place to see some of those things that are happening. Well, Eric, this has been a great time together. Thank you so much. Always very interesting information. We're close to wrapping up what we call the business end of things. Is there anything that we haven't covered today that you'd like to share with our audience, or maybe just words of advice for folks out there?
Yeah, I think I'm like you. I could talk about this stuff for hours. So, and I often do. So you can follow me on the internet somewhere. I post on LinkedIn. I post on Twitter. I think it's just stuff that I find interesting and kind of what it means for the industry. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff we didn't cover today that I like to think about and track. In terms of advice, it's a good question. I don't know that I have really good advice for people. I think it's more just like maybe the advice is don't take my advice or don't take advice. Figure it out for yourself, right?
There you go.
Which I think is natural for people in this industry. There's like a natural proclivity to for independence, self-sufficiency, figuring out problems, creativity in some ways. I say lean into what you're good at. And follow that. And maybe early on in the career that you have to kind of like work with what you're given, like work in the lane that you're given. But there's always opportunities, even with that, even within the constraints that you have to express your creativity or express and really follow and notice what you're passionate about, because that's going to inform everything else later on.
Well, and I think you even talked a lot about some trends and things that, hey, you know, some might catch someone's interest, say, hey, I want to hop on that and see what I can do to help that situation. Good stuff. So last time you were on the show, you were a little nervous, but you did participate in our rapid fire questions. We have a whole new set of rapid fire questions for you this show. Are you up to it?
I'm still ready.
Very good. So here we go. These are different questions from what you got asked before, and you have no idea what we're about to ask. What is a product or service that you have bought or used recently that was a real game changer for you? Sort of a where have you been all my life situation?
Oh yeah, this is an easy one. I use it every day. It costs less than $15, but it's a book light that is like colored. It puts out red light. So if you're reading at night, which I often do, and I'm a little bit neurotic about not getting super bright lights in my eyes at night because it's sleeping wise. So I clip this on the back of a book and it just gives you great light to read at night.
Wow.
It's a game changer.
That is cool. Good stuff. Okay. Question number three. What is your favorite sushi roll?
Sushi roll. I love when they have like little crispy pieces of, I guess, tempura or something on the outside of the, it's kind of sprinkled on top with, but it's like, I'm easy to please with sushi as long as it has like a salmon or a tuna or a avocado in it. I love sushi. It's hard to stop eating. It's really hard for me to stop eating sushi. I don't know if you have that problem, but it's like these little bites. How do you get full on little pieces like that? You just, they're like little snacks.
Good stuff. Well, my wife and I ate at a ramen restaurant the other day, and they had something called a crab rangoon roll. And it was incredible. So if you ever, any place has a crab rangoon roll, you got to try that one. Okay, next one. Who was your favorite teacher in school and what do you remember them for?
I had a math teacher in 12th grade, Mr. Tishka. He was so excited. He seemed really passionate about calculus. And it was matching my own sort of like interest in math at the time. And somehow the leap from pre-calc to calculus was just mind-blowing to me. It was sort of had a magical quality to it. You went from this sort of like finite space, you're adding up things, you know, these little like basically coming up with these, you know, ways to add up a lot of things all at once, to calculus, which is like, okay, now you add up an infinite number of things all at once and you take the slope of a line at a point. Like, how do you do that? It just blew my mind. And it had this like magical, imaginative quality to it. And it was, he made learning it so fun. It was also where I was like, this is something I'm passionate about this somehow. I don't know how or why, but I'm really interested in math. So that, I would say that informed a lot of what I did in college and kind of after. He sort of changed how I think about math.
Good stuff. I had a couple of late high school teachers who did something very similar to me, but with words. Calculus ended up being lost on me in the end, but great memories. Next question. What would you like to be remembered for at the end of your days?
I would like to be remembered for, I'd love to be remembered as being like having a lot of integrity. Whether that's I'm doing what I say, like things I say I'll do, I actually do it. You know, who I am in the world matches who I am inside, right? Like that you get the same person that I know myself to be internally. That to me is, I think people can pick up on that if there's like a fundamental congruence or incongruence between the interior and the exterior and what someone's thinking or how they're feeling versus how they're interacting with you. I want to be remembered as like a guy who's just in integrity with the world and integrity with myself.
I love it. That's great. Sounds like authenticity just to a large degree.
Exactly.
Next to last question. How would you describe your job to a 3-year-old?
I would say, hey, you see those construction workers out there? You see those people building that house, people hammering the nails and laying the foundation. I help them think about tomorrow, what they're going to do tomorrow. So they know what they're doing today. They're focused on building that house and laying that foundation. I help them decide what to do tomorrow.
Good answer. Last rapid fire question. Tell us a weird fact that you just happened to know.
I just saw this last night. So I have a fun fact is that I have a book right on my bookshelf called 2201 Fascinating Facts. It was my favorite book as a young kid. And I don't remember anything from that book right now. But what I remember is I read this fact last night that the word helicopter. So it's these two syllables, helicopter, right? Three syllables. And it sort of naturally splits between heli and copter, right? But the root of it, the sort of like etymology, I think is the etymology of it is it's the second half, P-T-E-R, is its own sort of like word. So it means sort of wing. It's like the same word of like pterodactyl, P-T-E-R, right?
Yeah.
So it sort of like has its own meaning to it. And so I for some reason I thought helio was one and then copter was the other word, but it's actually splits at P-T-E-R, helio, helioc, and pitter. Pitter. So
that is an interesting and weird fact, Eric. It's very interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you again, Eric. So why don't you remind us for folks who want to follow you, maybe even get in touch with you, how can they best do that?
So you can follow me on, if you're on Twitter or it's X, whatever they're calling it these days, it's just my first and last name, Eric Finnegan. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. There's actually another person involved in real estate with my same exact name, and we both have beards and we look around the same age. So it's not that person. So it's Eric Finnegan from Colorado. I work at John Burns Research and Consulting. You can, our website is jbrec.com. You can find me there. We have a huge team. So anything I've talked about today is informed by a lot of the work our team has done. It's just a set of all-stars here. So John Burns Research and Consulting, jbrec.com.
Awesome. I give shout outs to you folks all the time because of the great information you provide. It's really good. Fantastic.
Appreciate that, Todd. Thank you.
Well, thank you again for being on the show. We appreciate it. We were both successful with our challenge words. Eric had the word maniacal. Yeah, it's easy for me to say. Maniacal, which he worked in very early on. And I had the word crocodile, which I got squeezed in there eventually as well. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. I'm glad to have beat the challenge this time. I totally failed the last time. So I made sure to work it in early.
You did it. Thank you. That may have been the first time we ever did it with your previous episode. I'm not even sure. But so thank you again. And I'd like to thank our audience for tuning into this very special episode of Construction Disruption with Eric Finnegan, F-I-N-N-I-G-A-N of John Burns Research and Consulting. Look for his contact information also in the show notes for this episode. So don't forget to watch for future episodes of our podcast. We're always blessed with great guests. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or YouTube. Until the next time we're together, keep on disrupting and challenging and looking for new and better ways of doing things. And don't forget to have a positive impact on everyone you encounter. Make them smile, encourage them, simple yet powerful things you can do to change the world for somebody. So God bless and take care. This is Isaiah Industries signing off. Until the next episode of Construction Disruption.
This podcast is produced by Isaiah Industries, manufacturer of specialty metal roofing and other building products.